Open Mic Friday. That's what it is today on Law and Gospel on this Friday, August the 19th. I'm your host, Tom Baker, and you can call in on any theological subject that you care about. In fact, there are some subjects you may not be, well, sure are theological. There are some civil realm subjects that get very theological. In fact, I was just coming in, and you probably heard also on the news that there was a Florida teacher. Now, this is a Florida teacher who put up on his Facebook page that he was opposed to gay marriage in New York. And he just got fired. Can you believe that? Now, if you are a teacher in another state and you get fired for speaking the word of God. Political correctness. This is very, very interesting. And I hope they make a big case out of this, because I'm confident that the teacher will win. If you can't put on your private Facebook page your thoughts, your opinions, even if they go against the thinking of New York homosexuals, who cares? I tell you, I still believe First Amendment rights are going to be very, very important. Although it is kind of interesting to note how many things First Amendment rights do not really countenance. It's really kind of interesting. The one I always use is yelling fire in a theater. You know, people say, oh yeah, you should never do that. But there are a whole bunch of areas where what you say, you can be arrested for. And I don't think a lot of people kind of realize that. If you like to call about anything, including that, don't hesitate. Our numbers are 505-7850, toll-free 1-800-730-2727. We're going to start off with some of the exceptions to free speech that are in the law right now. You need to be aware of that so that when you're having a conversation with someone, like, in other words, supporting that teacher to have his private view on Facebook, especially if it's in regard to the will of God, well, you do need to know that there are some areas where there are exceptions to free speech. It's a Professor Richard Delgado that has listed these. And it's in his book, Must We Defend Nazis? Hate Speech, Pornography, and the New First Amendment, written in 1999. Here are some of the areas that are exceptions to free speech. Speech used to form a criminal conspiracy. Speech that disseminates an official secret. Speech that defames or libels someone. Speech that is obscene. Speech that creates a hostile workplace. Speech that violates a trademark. Speech that creates an immediately harmful impact or is tantamount to shouting fire in a crowded theater. You know, that's one I always like using. Patently offensive speech directed at captive audiences. Speech that constitutes fighting words. Speech that respects any authority figure. Like, for instance, people do get arrested if they speak out against the President of the United States in such a way that they're enticing harm against him. Speech used to defraud a consumer. For example, I just saw where this individual, and he sells stocks and bonds. This was a movie on TV, so it wasn't really true, but I'm sure there are folks like this. He would phone an elderly woman. She had a lot of money, and he would say, I guarantee you that in 6 months, your money will triple. And then, of course, she would invest with him. Which, of course, is illegal to say that. So he doesn't have free speech to defraud a consumer. And finally, untruthful or irrelevant speech given under oath during a trial. Now, as I read through those, I could see how some of them, you know, could be libelous, could be receiving some kind of a punishment, either a fine or time in jail. Although, sometimes, I was a little concerned. For example, patently offensive speech directed at captive audiences. There's no doubt that as a pastor, when I'm speaking in front of my congregation, that is a captive audience. Now, or if I go to a prison, like I did and did a seminar, and let's say I speak out against homosexuality and somebody is really offended by that, would I be in trouble under the laws of the land, the First Amendment rights? I don't know. So while I believe that Richard Delgado has really helped us with some areas of First Amendment, on the other hand, I can think of circumstances where I would be somewhat upset if I got fined for something, especially if I was saying according to God's word. But maybe you have a question on that. First Amendment rights, free speech. All right. Anything else to be on your mind? 505-7850 or toll free 1-800-730-2727. I've just got a whole bunch of potpourri stuff that people have emailed me or asked about. In George Barner's book, it's called Think Like Jesus, the 2003. He's developed a set of criteria to identify people with a biblical worldview. And I think this is going to be helpful because some people like to think of the United States of America as a Christian nation. Well, that's really not true. If it was a Christian nation, then one of the laws would be that every baby born would be baptized. So it's not a Christian nation. It's a nation with a lot of Christians in it. But more importantly is, do they have a biblical worldview? These are some of the criteria that he thought were very important. Number one, these people would believe that the Bible is the moral standard. Now, what I find interesting is that's his number one. To me, that is not the number one item of the Bible, even though I totally agree that the Bible is the moral standard. But it's not the civil standard. What? Well, there's a distinction between moral and civil laws. The civil laws of the Old Testament we no longer abide with because that was a different time, a different culture, a different land. We have civil laws of the United States of America, which we are to abide with. For instance, if we only had to follow the Old Testament Israelite civil laws, we could go 200 miles an hour anywhere we wanted in a car. Because I can't find one Bible passage which tells about a speed limit. On the other hand, if your spouse committed adultery and she was the female, you could stone her. So you can understand that we're not bound by the civil laws of the Old Testament. We're bound by the civil laws that God has instituted for our day and time. But the idea that the Bible is the moral standard is the number one view for those who have a biblical worldview. That kind of bothers me. Because the entire Bible was written for one purpose, and that is to talk about Jesus and your salvation. That should have been up there. But listen to the other ones. Number two, absolute moral truths exist and are conveyed through the Bible. Once more, I agree with that. But I don't think that is the primary reason why I'm getting people to read the Bible. We may use the Bible to back up our premises about moral absolutes and that there is truth. And some people think that in a society, a postmodern, that there are no really absolutes. Everybody thinks as they would. That's true if you believe in evolution. If I believed in evolution, there would be no moral standards at all. No, it's survival of the fittest. And I would act that way. I would have no compulsion at all to break all kinds of laws if I ended up being the surviving one. Because that's what evolution is all about. There are no built-in ethical or moral standards in the evolutionary scheme. I mean, go tell a lion he can't eat a donkey, or he can't attack a hyena, or he can't, you know, gobble up a deer. He's not going to listen to you. It's survival of the fittest. So if you're part of the evolutionary scheme, don't tell me about any moral absolutes you have, because moral absolutes come from God. And God has really clearly revealed how he created the world, and it wasn't through evolution. And, of course, that's another subject. If you really want a lot of information, just listen to Paul Clayton's program on Friday mornings when they have a whole section on evolution. Well, let's look at the third. They all agree with all of the following additional beliefs. God is the all-knowing, all-powerful creator who still rules the universe. Do you understand how generic that is? That means he could have created the universe through evolution, or he could have done it in six 24-hour days, or whatever. But we're still not talking about Jesus. But finally we get to Jesus. This is number four. Jesus Christ lived a sinless life. That is a belief of people who have what George Barna calls a biblical worldview. Jesus Christ lived a sinless life. Yes, that is absolutely true again. But why did he live a sinless life? You notice? It's kind of like looking at a cookbook, and somebody says, what you like about that cookbook? Oh, it, first of all, had a wonderful section on measurements. You know, what is a fluid ounce versus a powdered ounce, things like that. I was unaware of those things. Well, what else did you like about the cookbook? The pages were very glossy. Well, what else did you like about the cookbook? Oh, the photos of the food were exemplary. Well, what else did you like about it? You see, you can go through that whole thing about a cookbook, and not once do they tell you what the content is. Namely, oh, it's about a cookbook, how to use in 100 ways strawberries in order to make cakes and pies. Ah, now that's the point I'm waiting for. I could care less how glossy the pages are, how good the photographs are, if the recipes aren't any good. And so far, we haven't got to the recipe of the Bible. We're close with Jesus lived a sinless life, except for the fact that if you ask most people why he did, you know what they're going to say? Because he's God. When the answer is, because if he hadn't, you'd be going to hell. See, that's the answer. Well, let's go on. Satan is a real living entity. That's good. But it's not the essence of the Scripture. Yeah, it's part of the history of the Scripture. But so far, you can believe all of these things and be a Mormon, which means you don't have saving faith. But we're still trying to find out, what's the biblical worldview? Well, the next one gets closer. Salvation is a free gift of God, not something we can earn. I wonder how many people, if you ask them, would check yes for that and then go ahead and give a teaching that contradicts it. Like, some would say, oh yes, after you do a sin, you have to do penance to make up for it. And if you don't do enough, you're going to purgatory. Doesn't sound much like a free gift to me. Or, oh, yes, it's a free gift, but you have to make the decision. It's up to you. Well, then that means there's something I have to do, right? Oh, no, no. Making a decision isn't something you do. Oh, it's not? Well, who does it then? I mean, do you understand how ridiculous this gets? You see, by nature, I don't care if you're Baptist, Presbyterian, Methodist, Lutheran, Roman Catholic. By nature, we think that we do things, that it is really up to us to be saved. We get some of the credit. So when I read salvation is a free gift of God, yes, that's absolutely true, but I'm still trying to figure out how many Christians really understand and agree with that. The next one, every Christian has a personal responsibility to share his or her faith. You know, I've been reading a lot about faith recently, and I'm getting to the point where, what does that mean to share your faith? I'll tell you, if you ask most Christians, what is your faith? They're going to talk about content. Jesus Christ died on the cross. He died for my sins. In other words, they're talking about sharing propositional truths. That is the content of their faith. They're really not sharing their faith. You can't take your faith and give it to somebody. Like, it's not like sharing food that you have. Let's say you have 4 corn on the cob and 3 people come and are really hungry, so you keep one and give one to each of them. That's sharing your food. But when you share faith, you're not giving away your faith to anybody. The task of the Christian isn't to share faith, but is to make Jesus Christ known to the person with whom you are speaking. Now, you'll use the content of your faith perhaps to do that, but we can't hand out faith so that if you have faith like a mustard seed, then you're better off than if you don't. The next one. The Bible is totally accurate in all it teaches. You know, I'm wondering how many people have a worldview then, because I'm not finding many Christians who think the Bible is correct. And I'll tell you why they don't think it's correct is because a lot of times they misunderstand it. Like, look at all these so-called Christians who think homosexuality is okay today. And the Bible is incorrect in speaking about homosexuality as a sin. Or women ordination. And even worse, abomination. They don't think that's wrong. Yet they'll say, oh yeah, the Bible is true in all it says. Well, what they really mean by that is what I was kind of taught at the seminary I attended, because we had some very liberal professors there, that the Bible is true when it talks about the gospel. But of course, each one defined it differently. Some just talked about the gospel as the forgiveness of sins, period. That's all the gospel is. Others included the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. But not all the profs I had believed that Jesus' body was gone. No, there was a teaching that his body is still in the grave and he rose spiritually. And I was accused of being an idolater of the Bible because I believed that the tomb was empty. So just because somebody says, oh, the Bible is accurate in all that it teaches, what they're really saying to you a lot of times is, as long as it teaches what I say it should be teaching. Once it says something that I don't agree with, then obviously it's not accurate. But that's really not the Bible. That's part of man's word. Yeah, this is another distinction you'll hear sometimes between the words of God and the words of man. See, they make the point that, you know, prophets and apostles were human beings. So the part that God inspired, that's all accurate about salvation, gospel. But the part that men put in, no, they could make a lot of mistakes. See, that's one distinction, which the Bible doesn't permit. Because apostles and prophets wrote through the power of the Holy Spirit. Another distinction is, and you'll hear this often, I heard this just not that long ago on a television talking head who thinks he knows Christianity. He says, well, you know, the gospel, which only is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's the first mistake he made. The gospel isn't a doctrine about Jesus' salvation, but it's the first four books of the New Testament. In the gospel, he said, Jesus never speaks out against homosexuality. Therefore, oh yeah, Paul does. He agreed that Paul did, but Jesus is more important than Paul. So you should get that kind of dichotomy, that when Jesus speaks, that's God speaking. When Paul speaks, in fact, he's changing the teachings of Jesus. They've got a whole understanding of that. So, whether or not Barna is correct about people with a biblical worldview, I don't think the things that he mentions provide a biblical worldview at all. Not like the distinction between law and gospel. That's a biblical worldview. Let's go to the phone lines and talk with Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Pastor. You know, I was listening to your comments earlier, and it got me thinking about the woman caught in adultery. I have two questions with respect to that whole scenario. If you can look with me at Leviticus 20, verse 10, it seems to suggest that one of the Pharisees' problems with presenting this woman caught in adultery was that where was the man? Because 20:10 seems to say to me, if a man commits adultery with the wife of his neighbor, both the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death.
Well said.
And the other question I have is Luke 7, when this woman caught in adultery comes to anoint Jesus, and then John 11, seems to me that that woman caught in adultery was Mary, Martha and Lazarus' sister.
Yes, in fact, I just read an article about that. And I'm trying to think it was Paul Meyer who wrote it or whatever, but he kind of disagreed with that notion because the Bible isn't clear on that. First of all, there were a lot of people named Mary. And when you're talking about the woman caught in adultery, you said Luke 7?
Yeah, Luke 7 and John 8.
Yeah, John 8. Yeah, I was looking at John 8 there.
I'm thinking he was in Bethany when he was at the Pharisee's house. And John 11, verses 1 and 2, comes out and says that this is the Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill.
Yes.
Which kind of refutes the whole Da Vinci Code thing.
Oh, yeah. No, you're absolutely correct there.
But I had the pleasure of reading Brad Aulis's book, Life's Big Questions and God's Big Answers. And he makes the point in his book about worldviews defining how people perceive their world.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Guess what? We're at the end of the first break.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Pastor.
I appreciate your call. And if you've got more comments, you can call back after the break too, Jan. I'm Tom Baker. We'll discuss this a little bit when we get back from the break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Hi, I'm Pastor Ted Lesh, pastor at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in North St. Louis County, inviting you to listen to our KFUO radio worship broadcasts on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Active worship, preaching, music, and singing are part of every one of our services at Chapel. Join us Sunday nights at 6. It's one more broadcast worship opportunity for you from your friends at Chapel of the Cross and KFUO Radio.
Perhaps you're a regular worshiper at the church of your choice, or maybe it's difficult for you to get to church on Sunday morning. Either way, you'll benefit from our live worship broadcasts each week on KFUO Radio. Our first service begins at 8 o'clock and originates from Blessed Savior Lutheran Church in Florissant, where Reverend Matthew Roglin is pastor. Our live late worship broadcast at 10:30 comes from Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights, where Reverend Mark Femmel is pastor. Sunday morning worship on KFUO Radio.
I'm John Fuller, and this is Focus on the Family Minute. When you first become a parent, you might feel the weight of the world on your shoulders. Focus on the Family psychologist Dr. Julie Slattery says she was actually worried she might lose her son during her first week as a mom.
I had a normal delivery, although he was really big. He was 9 pounds, 6 ounces. So, but then quickly after, within about 12 hours, they had to take him to the ICU because his breathing was off. And they said, we don't know if it's his brain or his lungs or his heart. And I was a mess, you know, with the hormones didn't help either.
Yeah.
But it was that wrestling in the soul of, will you give them to me?
It's so important to remember that every life is sacred, and we need to trust our Creator to take care of each person in our lives, even when we don't always understand. Find more hope for pregnancies in crisis at focusonthefamily.com/radio.
You can provide for the people you love and the ministries you care about, including KFUO Radio, through a charitable estate plan. By establishing a charitable annuity, trust, or other planned giving instrument, you and your spouse may enjoy cash payments for life and at the same time leave a legacy gift for KFUO Radio. Contact our gift planning specialist to learn more.
Call Joan Harwell at 800-844-0524. That's 800-844-0524.
The Alzheimer's Association St. Louis Chapter will hold its annual Walk to End Alzheimer's at various locations around the metro area soon. There's a walk at Washington, Missouri on September 10th at the Washington City Pavilion. The St. Louis Walk will be held at Busch Stadium on September 17th. And the Walk to End Alzheimer's scheduled at SIU Edwardsville is set for September 24th. Registration information is available online at www.alzstl.org.
Tom Baker, Law and Gospel, here on this Open Mic Friday, which means you can call in with any question, 505-7850, toll-free 1-800-730-2727. Janet talked about whether that woman was maybe Mary, the sister of Lazarus. Now, it's kind of interesting, when you take a look at the Bible, the first Mary that comes to mind, of course, was Mary of Nazareth. She was Jesus' mother. Then you have Mary Magdalene. She's the one best known for having had 7 demons cast out of her. Then you have Mary and Martha. That's where, remember, Martha welcomed Jesus and the disciples into her home. We also know that Mary poured an expensive perfume on Jesus' feet and wiped them with her hair, which actually anticipated his death and burial a week later. Then you've got other Mary from Galilee. She's the mother of James, probably the wife of Zebedee, one of the first witnesses of the resurrection. In fact, this is a reversal of the typical social order that Jesus would appear to his female, the disciples. Even though the women are not referred to as disciples until Acts chapter 9, verse 36. Now, there's also the sinful woman that we've been talking about, the woman with the hemorrhage, the woman in the crowd where she was healed. a disabled woman. You got the poor widow. You got the daughters of Jerusalem. You got the Galilean women. These, by the way, were the faithful disciples who cared for the body of Jesus like family members. And they're mentioned in Luke chapter 8, verses 1 and 2. So, whether or not scholars have come to a conclusion as to who fits with each item, it's not because we don't know, it's because the Bible sometimes is not clear. But appreciate John's call, and we're going to go back to the phone lines right now and speak with Brian. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I saw a discussion on TV the other night. This guy who was an atheist, he was claiming to this person who said he was agnostic that there's no such thing as agnostic. He said there's either an atheist or there's a person who believes in God. And his reasoning was that is in agnosticism, we were saying if you believe in God, you have an active faith. You know, it's an act of believing. And if you're an atheist, you have an act of not believing that there's a God. But there can't be anything in between that, because if you claim to be agnostic, you say you don't know, you're claiming that there isn't. Do you understand what the question is?
I understand the question. I can't believe that you're up that late watching Red Eye.
You saw that too.
Oh, no, I never watch Red Eye.
I taped it and watched it.
Yeah, depending on who's on there. You know, he also said this, if you remember, Brian. He said, you know, I could be a Christian in a week.
That just floored me when I heard that, because this guy is a vociferous atheist.
Well,
all the time.
He's not like some of the main atheists.
Yeah.
You know, he's not, I mean, they're out to get Christians.
Right.
He isn't. Remember, he could be friends with people on both sides and this sort of thing. You know what I was thinking while I was watching that?
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could go visit him for 2 hours.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Isn't that interesting?
Just thinking, you know, in this book that he came out with, he was recommending, he had a recommendation from Richard Dawkins. Well, Richard Dawkins doesn't believe in any sense the way he does.
No, not at all.
He expresses his atheism in a totally different way. So he's completely at odds.
Well, you know, he was very Lutheran. There really is not only nothing called an agnostic from God's point of view, there's no atheist. Because whatever you trust is your God.
That's what I was going to say. I would have said if I was there.
I know. And, of course, they didn't have any other thinker who could get at his level. Talking there, even the host, you know,
the intellectual level that show's not terribly high. It's more kind of a comedy show.
Yeah, it really is. Although they bring up issues, etc., like this one here, which I find fascinating because you get a taste of how the world thinks about these things. In fact, I just read an article how Dawkins and company—they're really starting to fail. Because God is coming back to life more and more now, the more that they talk. And they just don't have, you know, it's kind of like me. I'm looking forward to some persecution, especially on First Amendment rights, like that gentleman in Florida who spoke out on his Facebook page against the gay marriage in New York. He got fired. We need more of that happening. Because when persecution comes to the church, we're going to be forced to have to stand up and make a decision. And I'm hoping we'll make the right one.
Exactly. And it'll draw out the basic definitions between things, which is the problem, because people are so blurry in their thinking right now because they don't understand the basics and what they actually do believe. You know, like you said, they have it in their soul and their heart, but when it gets through their head, it gets jumbled and baffled.
Oh, well, and then, well, I just went through George Barna's view of what would be a biblical worldview, and he described pretty good a Mormon, you know, but a Muslim would fit in much of that, because I do believe they think that Jesus Christ lived a sinless life also. They don't believe the whole thing on the cross and such, but that wasn't even in here. There was nothing about the cross, nothing about the resurrection, nothing about salvation by grace through faith on account of Jesus, and he calls that a biblical worldview.
Right.
It,
and
it's more like contemporary Christianity in the United States of America.
Yeah, exactly. And from the atheist point of view, they're trying to write their screeds now like their doctrine, like their doctrinal books.
Yes.
And the problem they're having is when they get down to the nub of it, they can't distill it because there's no there.
Very well said.
They have proof of what they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And people are even getting fed up with so-called proof for Christianity because it's really not coming through very well at all. I talked about that yesterday where, you know, all this evidence for Christianity just really falls on deaf ears. Like, was it C.S. Lewis? If you have faith, you don't need evidence, and if you don't have faith, no amount of evidence is going to help.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. Sometimes I almost feel like saying when I'm talking to people who are, you know, supposedly agnostic or atheist, is that, you know, you want God to explain things in a way that you'll understand, which is the definition that you want. Why should he have to do that?
Yes. You know, who do you think you are?
Right.
You know,
why do you have to define the world in your terms?
You know, it's kind of like when I was a kid, I was trying to explain to my father why I could really stay up till 11 o'clock watching these Japanese horror movies, even though I had to go to kindergarten the next morning real early.
Yes.
Took a while to get that, didn't it? Yeah, I couldn't understand why my father wouldn't let me stay up and see all these movies and all this, and I thought I was able to do it. And why I couldn't have a motorcycle before I got my driver's license. And, there's a whole bunch of areas where my father was really messed up on.
Yeah.
Which
I'm very unreasonable.
Yeah.
And the logic drops on you when you're about 20 or 30 years older.
Well, no, it actually dropped on when my sons, Luther and Philip, started asking for the same things. Yeah, I remember he wanted a real expensive bike, one of them. And I said, no problem. Just go get a job at General Motors, and within a week you'll be able to afford it. So, and that's what Christianity is like. You know, oh yeah, you can be saved, just invite Christ into your heart and you'll be saved. Both are impossible. I mean, especially talking to an unbeliever.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. They want everything explained down to the last detail, and then they say, they'll surrender, but it's not going to work that way either.
The other program I find really interesting, and that Red Eyes on Fox, is the one that comes before it in repeat, but it's on at 4 o'clock, I believe, and that is The Five.
Mm-hmm.
Get into really good discussion because it's a balanced program.
Yeah.
A lot of time, in other words, they have both points of view. Maybe not the right number of people on both sides, but at any rate, but they get along well together. A particular set of five. I know some of them were missing one day, and it was just a bad program. You know, because you know there's certain people that argue rather than dialogue.
Well, you have a conservative, you have a liberal, you have a libertarian.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure who the fourth one is. I think it's kind of a cross between a conservative and a moderate Republican.
But you'll never guess who my favorite character is on Red Eye.
The Ombudsman.
Oh, he is good. There's no doubt. I always like looking forward to the half where he does a summary of all the mistakes that people make during the first half of the program. But believe it or not, it's the homosexual.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just like that guy. He's really bright, and he's also against certain things that I was surprised he was against. That would be another gentleman I would like to sit down with for about 2 hours. Because there's nobody on any of these shows who has a truly biblical worldview. So they're all missing it.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a little bits and pieces of philosophy, but their theology is just abysmal.
Why don't we have people with proper biblical worldviews involved in television? I mean, somebody wrote to me and they said we hadn't realized that KFUO is the only radio station in the world that's predominantly Lutheran.
Well, they used to, but I think they don't anymore because entertainment can't be too taxing on the mind.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
I got one real quick last question, if I can, before I
go ahead.
Up your lines. what kind of biblical passage you give a person when you're trying to explain, make an argument against purgatory in terms of talking about the interim, that people don't suffer while they're there?
Okay, now, what I heard you say is, okay, we believe in purgatory. What's the passage to show that we don't suffer in purgatory?
No.
That's not what you meant, I'm sure.
Yeah, I meant in the interim.
Oh, okay, in the interim, because interim and purgatory aren't the same thing, obviously.
Right. So I'm saying, how do you, what kind of scriptural passage do you show that in the interim, people do not suffer?
That people do not suffer in the interim. That's a very good question. And every time I say, you know, every time you hear that's a very good question, you know why the person says that? Because he hasn't figured out an answer yet.
Little time.
And he's quickly whipping through the Bible to find out where, you know, where can I find this? Well, what I'm looking for, and I think I found it here, is actually when you read Revelation. And in Revelation, it's very clear that heaven, remember verse 4, Revelation 21, verse 4, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying, and there shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. That's a verse I would use for those who have died, because they have entered into that particular life.
Right, and in many other parts that... They're singing songs, and they're praising God, and they're having a great time.
I'm glad you said that. That's my favorite chapter in the whole Bible. It's Revelation chapter 5. This is not Judgment Day. No, this is the time when Jesus ascends to heaven. Remember, he appears as a slain lamb. And he takes the scroll from the right hand of God the Father, who's sitting on the throne. And if you want to see that picture, you go back to Daniel 7. And they sing a new song. You are worthy to take the scroll to open its seals, for you were slain and have redeemed us to God by your blood out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation, and have made us kings and priests to our God, and we shall reign on the earth. So this is joyous singing. What I would not point them to is a book called Heaven is for Real, where this four-year-old kid, I don't see how anybody can buy that book, read it, and think of it properly. I found 18 errors right out of the Bible, but one of the best ones is even his father had trouble believing that after he dies, he gets a choice between a sword and a bow and arrow to fight against dragons. And he will win, the four-year-old says, because Jesus is behind him. I mean, this is laughable that you listen to...
Yeah, lacks some of the grandeur of Scripture, eh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, what's so amazing, the father even admits that before this accident and all this what the son supposedly said... Now, the son is 4 years old, and I have a four-year-old granddaughter. She is brilliant. She can read, and the father admits that he read to his son Arch books. And right. Arch books, there are over 200 of them put out by Concordia Publishing House. They're Lutheran, and I know they're good. And I found, I just looked at the covers. I didn't even look throughout the book. And I found four covers that describe what he says. And the father says, I don't know where he ever would have known this. Like, that there's a light above Jesus, you know, about his head and things like that. And Jesus is in purple. But of course, the four-year-old boy, now I kind of wish the four-year-old boy is correct, because he says all human beings are going to have wings, because I always look forward to drag racing in heaven ever since I was a kid.
Well, the kids are just amazing mimics.
They are. And we were on vacation at a beach for 5 days, and my daughter and her husband and the two kids were there. And the daughter and the son were saying things, and I kept asking my daughter, Catherine, where did they learn that? And she said, I have no idea.
Yeah, you would be surprised. I had a discussion with my nephew like 3 years ago, and he recalled back to me everything that we talked about in the conversation. and it went on for like a half an hour.
Yeah.
So it was just not surprising there.
No, no. There's something about some little children. Yeah, the grandson, I think he's going into kindergarten, but he's at level 6th grade for reading. So I'd hate to be his teacher. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Bored. Maybe. But, no, they know how to do it there. It's at, yep, good things. Yeah, so that's kind of the passages I would use. The only one that's kind of interesting that may give a little different opinion, but, of course, this is also in the book of Revelation, and I'll bring it up just to be fair. But after the scrolls are opened, the fifth seal is called the Cry of the Martyrs. It's in chapter 6, verse 9. When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Now, see, that's an interesting... I mean, I could spend an hour talking about what they're saying there. Because right after that, a white robe is given to each of them, and they only have to rest a little longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were was completed.
Hmm.
So that's kind of an interesting statement, isn't it?
It is. So in the sense that the only thing that's not ushering in the end of the world is that there's still people yet to be saved.
That is well said. The only reason the end of the world hasn't come about is that the number of the elect has not been achieved. But
right.
Once that is achieved, the world ends just like when Jesus was on the cross. The reason he didn't die or allow himself to die was because he hadn't fulfilled all the promises of the Old Testament, including I thirst. But once he said that, then the very next words are, it is finished.
Yeah, magnificent.
So we're just waiting around for the last of the elect. So if you like Earth, don't tell anybody about Jesus. And especially if you're Roman Catholic, because all the natives in foreign countries... In fact, this is very interesting. There's over 1,000 languages of people who have never heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. And every day we lose 3 languages. This is really amazing for me to read because, and I think there are like 200 languages that have less than 19 people right now that speak them. And the person, of course, was bemoaning this. He was kind of an environmentalist and he wanted to keep languages because when we lose a language, we lose all the colorful things about it also. And what could be good and insightful to others. Like in Eskimo, a language, I don't know what the language is, but they have 25 words for snow.
Right.
And how many words do they have for healthy? 3. So it kind of tells you a little bit about their culture.
Yeah, all specific to what they're familiar with.
Absolutely. And who knows what other language. I mean, it's really interesting. You'll like this fact. Christianity is the only religion in the world where its adherents don't use the language of their master.
Hmm. Yeah, I had no idea.
What language did he use?
I don't know. Tell me.
Aramaic.
Oh, okay.
I mean, how many times do you hear Aramaic?
Do they still speak Jesus' Aramaic in Syria right now?
I'm not sure in Syria. I had a former field worker. He's on the air a lot of times, too, and he comes from Palestine. He'd be able to really answer those questions well. And so I'll try and get in touch with him. Anyway, I have to because he wanted to know the next time I was going to do the hour on Heaven is for Real because he's had people questioning him and want to know what I was going to say. I also just found out that a seminary faculty at Concordia Seminary had a discussion on Heaven is for Real. I haven't read it yet, but I'm sure there's going to be some great insights in it. See, that's what a faculty should be doing. They should be putting out biblical understanding. In fact, I was talking to Peter Krosky, and you all know him, Animals in Heaven. By the way, that Animals in Heaven you can now get on Amazon under their, what's that book called?
No. Kindle.
Kindle, thank you very much. I never can remember that. And we put it up, and we now have a wonderful review. And if you'd like to review it, please write a review for it. And we have, I just checked today, we sold our first copy. And so that means it's up near the top, and we're looking forward to it. But he wrote another piece, Jesus' View of Gay Marriage. You know, we talked about that and gave it out for free to any of our listeners who let me know with lawgospel at lawgospel.com. But we talked last night, the next one he's doing is he's reworking his book on racism, and we're going to put it up on Kindle and call it Jesus' View of Racism. Hmm. And my opinion is he should have a whole set of Jesus' View of. Because that's a biblical worldview. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
My goal on Law and Gospel is to get people to think like God is thinking rather than what we normally think.
Yeah, and a lot of times today people want to understand, go from the general, which they're familiar with, to the specific.
Yes.
And the problem is a lot of times they're being taught from the specific to the general, but they never get to the general.
And I hate talking, as you know, if you listen for any length of time, I hate talking in generalities. Because, I mean, you can say so many, like the one item Barna said, that people with biblical worldviews believe that Jesus is sinless. Well, I can name a number of religions that believe that aren't Christian.
Yeah.
You know, so once you get so general, what you need to say is that Jesus was sinless in order that he might pay for our sinner sins. See, that's the point. That's the biblical worldview.
Right. And it's true with all polls, just generally speaking. If the people that they usually refer to as people who don't know or don't have an opinion,
yes.
If you keep asking them questions, they'll have an opinion. It's there.
Yep.
They haven't been asked enough.
No, that's precisely correct. And, boy, well, it's been fun talking to you. I just have one thing to say. Get thee behind me, Satan. That's not directed to you, Brian. It's directed. That's what we're going to talk about on Monday.
Sounds good. I'll be tuning in. Thanks.
Yeah, well, because who knows if he said it to you like he said it to me. Goodbye, Brian.
So long.
I'm Tom Baker, and truly that's what we're going to be looking at on Monday. From Matthew 16, verse 23, how'd you like to be one of the best friends of Jesus, one of his great disciples? And Jesus says, get thee behind me, Satan. Well, you need to know why he said that. Because has he said it to you? And if he said it to you, how do you deal with that? And that's what we're going to be talking about on Monday. Want to get a hold of me? Ask me any questions? Or get me to do a seminar in your area, anywhere in the country. Numbers are 1-877-CMS-1962. That's a toll-free number, 877-CMS-1962. Or email me at lawgospel@lawgospel.com. And make sure you go to our lawgospel.com website and get Animals in Heaven. Till Monday, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekdays at 3 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.